The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey folks, I challenge you to think of at least one thing you no longer do that you wish you could. Do you miss like playing golf, maybe long walks with your spouse, sleeping through the night? Are you ready to start living without pain? My colleagues and friends, Hugh Hewitt, Dennis Prager, Mike Gallagher, have been talking about their own successful experience with Relief Factor, and you can add Eric Metaxas to that list. Relief Factor is changing the lives of tens of thousands of Salem radio listeners by reducing and even eliminating daily aches and pains. ReliefFactor.com is full of great success stories, and now I am on board. For just $19.95, Relief Factor is offering a three-week quick start that could help you live your life with little to no pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com to see testimonials from folks all over the country. I love reading them. Over 70% of those that try Relief Factor continue as a customer. Feel the relief and get back your independence and freedom from the aches and pains of everyday life. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Read the testimonies. I tell all my relatives to take it. ReliefFactor.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show.
I shouldn't tell you this, but Eric hired someone who sounds just like him to host today's show. But since I'm the announcer, they told me. So I am telling you, don't be fooled.
The real Eric's in jail.
And welcome.
Hey there. That's a fact. I won't deny it. Since I'm not he, he's in jail. I'm speaking today to someone who's written a biography. As you probably know, I have a thing for biographies, especially of certain figures whom I consider heroic. Today, I am back in the studio, or I should say she is back in the studio with me, Sonia Purnell, the author now of the book we're discussing, Clementine, The Life of Mrs. Winston Churchill. Sonia Purnell, welcome.
Thank you very much.
I was so thrilled when you were last here and I found out that you'd previously written about Clementine, Mrs. Winston Churchill, and I said, if you come back to the United States, you've got to come in here and talk about it, and here you are, so thank you.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
And, well, I have a very, very sophisticated audience, not on this program, but on other stuff that I do. No, we have so many people who listen to this program. I know they feel that they're getting some kind of an education, and it's true. And when I heard that you'd done the book on Clementine Churchill, I thought we've got to talk about it. But what I didn't know, what you just told me, was that there has not been any biography of her by anyone except the one that her daughter wrote. Was it in the 70s?
That's right. It came out in 1979. And a lot of papers weren't available at that point. And, you know, when you're the daughter of someone, you write a particular sort of biography.
Right.
A really great piece of work, a wonderful book, but not really a 360-degree appraisal, if you like.
Right. Well, I do find it amazing that no one before you, you know, when I think of what year this is, I mean, that no one before you wrote this in 2015 had written a biography of Clementine Churchill. It just seems so strange to me. Do you suppose that people were scared off because her daughter had written what people thought of as the definitive book?
Well, I think possibly a little bit of that, but also just that Clementine, because she'd prefer to be called Clementine, she's
Am I saying Clementine? I said Clementine. It's Clementine.
She preferred Clementine.
She preferred Clementine,
yeah.
And of course, Winston called her Clemmy.
Clemmy, yeah. Or she who must be obeyed, he also called her sometimes.
But Clemmy doesn't sound like a very attractive feminine name, but I guess that's what happens when you're married. You put those things aside.
Yes, I think so. But I think also with her that, you know, she's been overlooked by history for a long time.
Yeah.
Her husband, quite rightly, you might argue, is the most biographed person in history.
Now, that seems, I would have guessed for sure it would be Lincoln.
No, more books about Churchill.
Even
more books about
that. That's truly amazing.
It is truly amazing. But, you know, some of them, there's one called The Greatest Britain Unmasked. It's 800 pages long. And she doesn't appear once in the index. And yet, he himself, Churchill himself, said he couldn't have done any of it without her.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, when I joke around about the idea that he called her Clemmie, and I think they had a very clearly special relationship. This was not just some woman that he married. This was a woman on whom he leaned and in many ways. And I guess let's start with their story. How and when did they meet?
Well, they met, first of all, at a ball in 1904. She was a beautiful woman when young, absolutely stunning. He arrived at the ball and noticed her, asked her mother to introduce them. And so they were introduced to Miss Clementine Hosier, as she was then. And do you know what happened? The great wordsmith was struck dumb. He just stood there, open-mouthed, and didn't say a word. He had no small talk. He just simply didn't know what to say. Well, she thought he was a bit weird and stepped away and went to dance with a friend who said, "What on earth were you doing talking to that dreadful fellow Churchill?" They didn't meet again for 4 years. And then there was a dinner party, 1908. She wasn't invited initially, but one of the women couldn't come, so then she was invited to make up the numbers. He was late. He didn't arrive until the main course. There was one chair left empty at the table. It happened to be next to her. He sat down, and they didn't stop talking. You see, she loved politics and world events and current affairs just in the way that he did. So suddenly he found someone who he had so much in common with, and she found him exciting. Both of them had had various engagements, and they hadn't led to marriage. Now, finally, they found their soulmate.
I have to ask you to tell my audience about their backgrounds, because, you know, in America, anyone can be from anywhere, and usually is, whatever that means. But in the cases of these two figures, you didn't go to the ball that they went to in 1904 or to the dinner party in 1908 unless you were of a certain social class, a certain set. Where did each of them come from?
Well, you're totally right. I mean, Churchill himself, of course, his cousin was the Duke of Marlborough. His grandfather was the Duke of Marlborough too. He had grown up at Blenheim, the only private palace in Britain.
I have visited Blenheim, and when they say that this is where Churchill grew up, you think, my goodness.
Absolutely.
This is the antithesis of a log cabin, to bring it back to Abraham Lincoln. It really is extraordinary, to the manner born and then some.
I mean, it is an extraordinary. You're quite right. And he was someone who never carried cash, much like the Queen, who never been on a bus in his life, once went on the tube, the underground in London, but got sort of rather sort of panic-stricken and stayed down there on the Circle Line going round and round. Someone had to be sent to fetch him. I mean, he really had no idea what it was like outside the gilded circle he'd grown up in. Now, Clementine was the granddaughter of a Scottish earl with a wonderfully romantic, haunted castle in Scotland in the Scottish Highlands.
Genuinely thought to be haunted.
Genuinely.
Or thought to be genuinely haunted.
Ah, well, interestingly. Both ways, I think. Mm-hmm. But her mother, Lady Blanche, had married unhappily and had become, shall we say, interested in others. She wanted to have children. Her husband didn't. So she went freelance. And she was said to have had...
While she was married.
While she was married.
We frown on that. Go ahead.
Well, she was said to have had 10 lovers on the go at once on some occasions.
Well, now, I love when people from England say certain things, because that sounds very funny. You just sort of trip over a few syllables and evoke an entire universe. Said to have 10 lovers on the go at once. I think we would say that she slept around very badly. But, of course, we're known to be more honest and vulgar in America.
Well, I mean, it's interesting how the upper classes in Britain in those days were well known for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
But you were supposed to be discreet about it, so you could carry on as you wish, as long as people didn't find out. But they did kind of find out about Lady Blanche. She didn't really go to extremes to hide what she was doing. But anyway, so that Clementine's father was almost certainly not her putative father. It was probably the first Lord Reedsdale, otherwise known as the grandfather of the Mitford sisters.
Oh, my goodness. These are things that I know I've heard once or twice before. The Mitford sisters, We've spoken about them on this program, and I'd love to do several programs just talking about the Mitford sisters. You haven't written on them.
I haven't. Perhaps I should.
I think you must. But anyway, okay, so a storied lineage.
Yes, absolutely. So she grew up in relative poverty. I mean, aristocratic poverty.
Only
12
fireplaces?
No, actually not even one sometimes. Her mother, once that she got divorced from Captain Hosier, or Colonel Hosier, perhaps not surprisingly, and he refused to pay alimony, perhaps also unsurprisingly. So Lady Blanche was actually rather hard up and kept having to move house to stay one step ahead of her creditors. So Clementine grew up with very little money, really, and was sometimes sent off to the market to ask for food on credit. Now, she hated doing this, of course, and was deeply embarrassed, and also embarrassed because Lady Blanche would sometimes gamble away what little money they had in the casino.
Well,
so there was quite an unsettled upbringing.
It's really interesting when you think about the upper classes in England. I mean, all we have to do is think of George IV. I mean, really, really profligate, terrible people in some ways. It's just so sad and always so interesting. We'll be back, folks. We're talking with the author of, I would say now, the definitive biography on the wife of Winston Churchill. What do you think about that?
Men, if you want to have less bathroom problems, listen to this. A new Nobel Prize discovery was just proven in a clinical trial to help men urinate 241% more, ending multiple trips to the bathroom and the constant urge to go. This breakthrough is finally available in a pill called Prostavive LS, developed by famed men's health expert Dr. Al Sears. And for a limited time, you can get a free bottle. Call 800-338-3683. Patients who've taken Prostavive LS are singing its praises.
Hi, my name is Paul, and I'm 73 years old. I used to get up multiple times a night to go to the bathroom, but after taking Prostavive LS, I now sleep through the night.
Prostavive LS does not require a prescription, and there are no side effects. But this free bottle is not available in stores. Call 800-338-3683 now to get your free bottle of this Nobel Prize-winning discovery proven in clinical trials to help men urinate 241% more. That's 800-338-3683. Just pay shipping and handling.
Guys, waking up over and over to urinate is not okay. But now, you can reduce those nighttime bathroom trips with the ingredients in Super Beta Prostate P3 Advanced. We're talking about less urges to urinate at night, less bathroom trips during the day, and better bladder emptying.
It's like taking three prostate supplements in one.
You can try a full 30-day bottle of P3 Advanced, free.
Just pay shipping and handling.
No strings attached, no obligations, and no commitments to buy. This is a 30-day supply, absolutely free.
Call 1-800-424-8908.
Superbeta Prostate is the best-selling brand in major retailers like Walmart. But for this no-strings-attached free bottle, you must call now.
Call 1-800-424-8908.
Don't miss out on this unprecedented free offer.
1-800-424-8908. 1-800-424-8908.
So there's this guy named Jordan, and he's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. But then he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched from medical insurance to MediShare, which is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this really going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. If you want to find out more, here's a number for you. 844-45-BIBLE. That's 844-45-BIBLE. 844-45-BIBLE.
Hey, Mike, how's the house coming along?
Needs a ton of work. The pipes are leaking. Needs a new roof. The AC just broke. I just don't have time to do it all myself.
You know anyone?
Oh, just ask Home Advisor. They match you with the best local pros for any home project.
Cool.
Yeah, you can read reviews and book appointments online.
What's it cost?
Actually, Home Advisor is always free to use.
Nice. I'll check it out.
Go to homeadvisor.com or download the free app. Home
Advisor. Are you a responsible person who finds yourself growing deeper in credit card debt? Then get ready for a toll-free number that will put you on a path to financial recovery. Trinity Debt Management will consolidate your accounts and work with your creditors. You'll save thousands and become debt-free for keeps. If your debt has you down, we should talk. Call Trinity at 1-800-990-6976. 1-800-990-6976. 1-800-990-6976.
Taxes show. Hard to believe that Winston Churchill lived long enough to know the Beatles, but not long enough to have heard anything by Wings. It's a tragedy. We're talking to the author of a biography of Winston Churchill's wife, Clementine. We say Clementine?
We should say. She liked it.
She liked Clementine. We get to choose how people pronounce our names. Clementine, the life of Mrs. Winston Churchill. So you were just saying that she grew up in somewhat strained circumstances.
Very much so.
And she certainly wasn't sure who her father was.
She wasn't sure who her father was. There was a lot of quite sort of vicious gossip about her. But also, Lady Blanche was not exactly the ideal mother. She rather worshipped Clementine's elder sister, Kitty, who was puckish and impudent and cheeky and fun. And Clementine was seen as sort of the rather duller little sister, but then Kitty died. This was terrible for Clementine. They'd been great sort of soulmates, but then Clementine started to come to the fore to blossom, and by her teens was considered to be a great beauty with a very good brain.
With a very good brain. And the liver, fine. it is amazing, really, because it seems in the 20th century, maybe in the latter part of the 20th century, to have become widely understood, perhaps via Dr. Spock and others, that one should not favor a particular child, that's not done. But in the past, you hear innumerable stories of this kind of thing, that parents would have favorites and make no secret of it.
Oh, I mean, it was blatant. And in fact, we know that Clementine and Kitty used to talk about it a lot, and Kitty would try and tell Clementine not to mind it too much. It's difficult to say, you know, it's easy to say that, but it's difficult to
Well, and of course, Clemmy had her revenge by marrying Winston Churchill, but we'll get to that. Okay, so how old is she when she meets Winston Churchill, and where is he in life at that point?
Well, she's in her early 20s, so she's been to grammar school. The headmistress really sees her as a star. He was at Harrow, what we would call a public school, and you would call a private school, where he'd seen as anything but a star, not seen as academic at all. They meet when she's in her early 20s. She's gone through three engagements by this point and broken them all off. So she's acquiring a little bit of a reputation. People say, well, she's never going to settle down. He'd been pursuing all sorts of women that he'd wanted to marry. He was now a successful politician, beginning to become a global celebrity, even only in his early 30s. But he kept being turned down.
So he was then about a decade older than she?
He was, okay. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So he had a great deal more world experience than she did. He'd been in the Boer War in South Africa. He'd seen fighting in Cuba. He was now a rising politician. He was already a star. But as I say, he couldn't find a wife who would put up with him because, you know, he wasn't the easiest person. And as I said before, he had no small talk.
And yet he was not yet heavy.
No.
This is the Churchill. We don't think of him, you know, as the young Churchill. Mm. But okay, so the conversation seemingly random, coincidental that they happen to be seated next to each other, And do they pretty quickly become an item then?
Yes, they do. I mean, everyone is gossiping. Everyone else at the table that evening is gossiping by the end of the evening because they've never seen Churchill and a woman talk so enthusiastically and passionately about the things that they both love. They both also love France, by the way, so it's France and politics. So within a few months, he asks her to marry him at Blenheim. He asks her to visit him at Blenheim. It's pretty, you know, clear what he's going to do. But he's very shy, you know, and she waits and waits and waits for him to, you know, propose. And he doesn't, he doesn't, he doesn't. And then she decides that she's watching a spider go across the floor. There's a crack in the floor. And she's deciding that if the spider has crossed the crack in the floor and he still said nothing, I'm off. Well, luckily for you and luckily for me, the spider never got to the crack in time. And he asked just in the
take that, Mr.
the last
Hitler.
Seconds. Yeah.
Wow. That is just, I mean, obviously we all love stories like that, but it is funny, isn't it? I mean, can you imagine having the capacity to invite someone to Blenheim, you know, and what that would do to anyone, much less a woman thinking that maybe somebody's going to propose to me.
I mean, it's so awe-inspiring there. I mean,
the places are inspiring, yeah. But then the fact that he owns it or that it's his home, it just becomes a little ridiculous. So, okay, so at this point, he's rather mature already in his career. What is he doing at this point? Is he in the Navy?
No, he's about to become president of the Board of Trade, which is a rather grand title, but it's basically the politician in charge of the ministry that deals with business. So it's not the very top flight of politician, but if you have that job in your early 30s, you're doing really well.
Mm. I don't have that job.
No, me neither.
Not in my early 30s. Okay, so he's doing very well. They marry. I don't remember how many children they had.
They had five altogether. But there's one other thing perhaps I should tell you about when he proposed. She was wearing her last clean dress. She didn't have many clothes. And people used to laugh at her, saying that now that she'd married Winston, she'd no longer have to make her own clothes because that's what she had been doing for some time. So she enters a completely different world to the one that she'd grown up in many, many ways. And they go on. She has her first child very quickly, Diana. She's never a natural mother. She doesn't really take to motherhood. I think had she been alive in another era, she might not have had children. She certainly wouldn't have had five.
Aren't we glad she did? It's
absolutely
a fascinating thing, really, that that she comes from that background and then suddenly she's Mrs. Winston Churchill. How did her life change initially, and how was it that he came to lean on her as he did?
Well, you know, he too had had a strange upbringing where his parents were never around. His father died when he was around 20, but even while his father was still alive, he took very little interest in Winston. And his mother too didn't really take any interest until he was grown up. He'd had a wonderful nanny, but he was emotionally quite needy, so they both were. So in a sense, you know, that became part of the rock of their marriage. But quite quickly she realized that unless she entered into his professional life, into his political life, she would barely see him. He loved politics. It was everything to him. It was his sort of his bloodstream, if you like. So initially, well, she wasn't quite sure how to play it, and then she realized she had to be involved in everything, in his appointments, in the way that he organized his office. She stood in for him sometimes. She made speeches on his behalf. She was really, this had never been done before. Women didn't do this kind of thing. But she knew that this marriage would only work if she did. So she read Hansard, which is the record of the proceedings in the House of Commons. She read lots of biography and history. She scoured the newspapers. She wanted to be able to hold conversations with Winston as his equal, his sparring partner, to be able to challenge him when necessary and to coerce him sometimes when necessary, but also to comfort him when she thought he'd got it right, but perhaps was getting flack for doing so. So quite quickly, she became utterly indispensable, almost like an unofficial chief of staff.
It's so interesting the way things like that can work, because obviously so many marriages are not like that. But it seems that, you know, we always hear the cliche of behind every great man, there's a, you know, and there's great truth to that. But in this case, it seems that she really was precisely what he needed, because when you describe him as being so out of touch, having grown up with a silver spoon in his mouth and being unable to do the most basic things, you can see how someone like that would need a particular kind of support, especially when he was forced to confront some of the greatest challenges in modern history.
Yes, absolutely. So she was more than a wife. I mean, she ran his household brilliantly, and there's no doubt about that. She gave him the emotional support, but she was there all the way through the two world wars. I mean, he was at the center. They were at the center of two world wars.
We forget the first war. I mean, I don't mean we forget the first war itself, but we forget his involvement, unless you're a real aficionado of Churchill, in the first war. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, he started off the First World War as the chief of the political master of the British Navy, then the largest navy in the world. So this was an important job. However, he was always a bit of an empire builder, in the sense that he wanted to get involved in the army as well. This didn't go down well with his colleagues. Clementine was constantly advising him against doing this and smoothing ruffled feathers. He was distraught at the appalling slaughter in the trenches of the First World War. He came up with this idea known as Gallipoli, where the idea would be to try and take Constantinople, going through the Dardanelles Straits. It was a great idea, badly executed, and tens of thousands of young men died. He was blamed, rightly or wrongly. I think you should actually share the blame around. His whole career was destroyed, and she had to help him find
this
a way back.
A very, very important point to end on for this segment. We'll be right back. More on the Eric Metaxas Show.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. Mexican officials are saying gunmen who killed 9 U.S. citizens, 3 women and 6 children, may have mistaken the group's large SUVs for those of a rival drug gang. Meanwhile, a suspect has been apprehended near the border with Arizona. The House Intelligence Committee has announced the dates for public impeachment inquiry hearings. Ukraine diplomat William Taylor, career department official George Kent, and former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine Marie Yovanovitch are scheduled to appear. State attorneys general with pending lawsuits against OxyContin maker Purdue Pharma and its owners are asking a federal bankruptcy judge today to give them more time to continue negotiating. Stocks have been lower after Reuters reported that a signing of an initial U.S.-China trade deal could be delayed, but have made an improvement. The S&P is now up fractionally. This is SRN News.
If you're drowning in IRS debt and can't afford to pay, then you need to take advantage of special IRS tax programs that are available and free yourself from IRS collection efforts once and for all. Due to the financial hardship consumers are facing throughout the country, the Internal Revenue Service has made it easier to settle delinquent tax problems. An open phone line has been established by Community Tax for consumers to call and see if they qualify. Take down this number or store it in your cell phone, but call the Community Tax Helpline at 800-600-3010. If you owe back taxes to the IRS and cannot afford to pay them back, or even if you have years of unfiled tax returns, there's no need to fear anymore. But you have to call the Community Tax Helpline today at 800-600-3010 for the help that you need. Don't take on the IRS alone. They can attack your wages, savings, pension, home, and even your Social Security check. Call 800-600-3010 for your free consultation and to see if you qualify. That's 800-600-3010.
How was the doctor?
Not what I expected. I have arthritis.
What? How can I help?
Well, the doctor gave me a rundown on what to know and what to do, and also mentioned a symptom tracking app called Arthritis Power. It can help me and the doc manage my arthritis better.
Well, great. Let's download it from the App Store. Arthritis Power?
Yep, it sounds easy. I just have to answer questions about my pain and other symptoms once a week. It only takes a few minutes. The doctor says that seeing my symptoms over time in this app can help us understand how my arthritis is responding to treatment.
That's cool. Now don't forget to use it, old man. You'll be helping yourself and your doctor.
Old man? And what does that make you then?
If you have arthritis, download Arthritis Power. Arthritis Power is from the nonprofit Global Healthy Living Foundation and its patient community, Creaky Joints. Your information is protected, and there's never a cost. In fact, you could even be paid for participating in research surveys about arthritis. For more information, go to arthritispower.org or search for Arthritis Power in your app store.
Somewhere beyond the
it, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. That's Bobby Darin. I'm Eric Metaxas, and I'm sitting here with Sonia Pernell, the author of this wonderful biography of Clementine Churchill, the wife of Winston Churchill. And we're just at this point, Sonia, where you're reminding me that he it was who thought up this tragic idea of Gallipoli, and that this hung over his head throughout his career, and I guess made him largely somebody who was wandering in the wilderness between the wars.
Well, it certainly contributed to that. I mean, people said that he had blood on his hands. He had to find a way back, though. And how he did that, very much encouraged by Clementine, was that he volunteered to go and fight in the trenches himself. A lot of people have forgotten this.
Actually, I didn't realize when. What year did Gallipoli happen?
1915.
Okay, so he... I did not know that as a kind of penance, he decides he needs to fight, actually personally fight in the trenches.
Yes, so he became Major Churchill. He did go and fight in the trenches. Now, I mean, unsurprisingly, from that kind of background, he was utterly horrified
at what he had to do.
He wanted to come back quite quickly. And Clementine, this is where she starts to become an extraordinary force in his life. She persuaded him to stay for 5 months. She knew, of course, her husband could be killed by a wicked bullet, as she put it, at any time. But she also knew that if he came back too early, before he acquired what she called his military halo, he would never be able to be rehabilitated.
Such wisdom, really. I don't know where she got it from, but that's such extraordinary wisdom in many ways. And it's also funny because when you think of these historical figures, whether George Washington or Lincoln, there are people who you think they have to suffer because they're being prepared for particular greatness.
Well, I think that's true in both cases. They suffered a great deal in the First World War. They were ostracized, as I said. She absolutely hated him in being in the trenches, of course. But she also knew that that was the only way back and that was the right thing for him to do. It was a penance, that's quite right. And it's interesting that on the eve of D-Day in the Second World War, he sat there with his head in his hands, remembering Gallipoli, torturing himself. Would D-Day be like that? Were they going to make the same mistakes again?
That's a parallel I've never heard, and it couldn't be more apt. How amazing! Because there are great parallels, obviously.
There are great parallels. I mean, obviously, the preparation for D-Day was infinitely better. A lot of lessons had been learned from Gallipoli,
But think of that. If Gallipoli hadn't gone so poorly and hadn't been so humiliating and painful for Churchill, perhaps D-Day would have not gone so well.
I think there are lots of lessons that he learned and others learned. This is very important to look at how he, as the leader in the Second World War, learned from his mistakes and mistakes of others in the First World War. It was almost like an apprenticeship his entire life for the moment that he became Prime Minister in 1940. And it was also an apprenticeship for Clementine. She saw, too, those mistakes that he had been made. But it's interesting, while the ships were being made ready to go to Gallipoli, she said, but you haven't got enough doctors or medicines. And it was she, the wife of the First Lord of the Admiralty, who arranged for the ships to dock at Malta to pick up doctors and medicines. She actually made that intervention and made it happen. So, this is not the usual thing for the wife of a politician to do.
And she's the mother of five children, and she may have not been the best mother, but she was still the mother of five children while all this is happening.
She hadn't had all her children by this point, but she had three children at this point, yes.
But that's extraordinary. Well, what else do we need to know about this great woman? First of all, let's skip to the end quickly. What year did she die?
1980.
Mm-hmm. 1980. See, that's almost impossible to believe that she lived that long. He died in 65, didn't
that's
he?
That's right, yeah.
My goodness, 1980. To think we might have met her. The years between the wars then, Did he ever think that he would become prime minister? Was that his goal early on?
Yes, it was always his goal and hers. She used to talk about, I believe in your star, when he was in the trenches, in those letters that they sent to each other. She used to say that to him, saying that you are destined for greatness and that's why you must rehabilitate your career. So she tried to stop him making mistakes. And then when he made mistakes, and he made many, many blunders in his career, she tried to rescue him and find a way back. And she was very, very good at that. He was also someone who upset other people. He had this huge character. People described talking to him as a bit like arguing with a brass band. You know, it was difficult to get yourself heard. And so people realized quite quickly that if you wanted to get a point through to Churchill and he wasn't listening, you went to Clementine and you asked her to do it on your behalf. And on so many, many, many occasions in his life, that's what happened, because she was a conduit to him and he would always, always listen to her.
Isn't it amazing? I mean, when you think about the beauty of marriage as an idea, that much in history wouldn't have begun to be possible without these marriages. I mean, this marriage obviously made it possible for him to do what he did with Dunkirk and all of these moments in history that affect our lives today.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Because he had this woman who loved him, obviously, and who was wise.
Well, let's ask three people who might know about this. So, first of all, his doctor, Lord Moran, who was with him all the time. He always had a doctor with him. And Lord Moran was asked, you know, where does Churchill get his resolve and strength from? And he said, oh, yeah, Clementine, no doubt. His chief of staff, General Ismay, hardly a feminist, a military man, he wrote at the end of the war that the history of the world, and Winston Churchill, but the history of the world, too, would have been different without Clementine Churchill.
Before you give us the third person, we're going to hit pause. We're going to do a little advertising. We'll be right back. Hey, folks, Eric Metaxas here. There's something you all need to know about Relief Factor and about Pete and Seth Talbot, the father and son owners. As you know, they're on a real mission to help as many people as possible get out of pain, and they've been a consistent sponsor of the show for several years. In radio, sponsors come and go. They may even stay for a year or so. It sounds like they're doing super, and then they're gone. Well, not so with Relief Factor. Pete and Seth are consistent year after year, and that's because tens of thousands of people are now taking Relief Factor every day for their back and neck pain. I'm one of them. Shoulder pain, knee pain, hip pain, and they are now in less or no pain at all. All these people, it's as simple as that. It works. That's why I've joined Pete and Seth on their mission to help you get out of pain today. And the first step is to order the 3-week quick start pack for $19.95. If you're still skeptical, remember, it's not just me. There are tens of thousands of other nice people who would happily tell you to give it a try. It can be done. It could be at your door in just 2 to 3 days. Go to relieffactor.com. Remember, relieffactor.com. It works. It works.
Hi, this is Dennis Prager, and we just launched a new Pragertopia membership called Pragertopia Unlimited. Members can listen to any and all audio programs that are in the Dennis Prager store. That's over 400 programs to choose from. Show segments, talks, lectures, courses, even full access to all 5 books of my Torah teaching. For a limited time, an annual Pragertopia Unlimited membership is only $119. Join Pragertopia Unlimited today. Go to Pragertopia.com.
Guess what? Right now is the perfect time to get your house ready for the winter so you can sit back and enjoy the holidays. Home Advisor can help get you started. Home Advisor matches you to the right pro for the job in seconds. You can read reviews and even book appointments online. Home Advisor can help with any home project, big or small, painting, plumbing, even remodeling. So why wait? Go to HomeAdvisor.com or download the free app to get started on your next project. Home
Advisor. How was the doctor?
Not what I expected. I have arthritis.
What? How can I help?
Well, the doctor gave me a rundown on what to know and what to do, and also mentioned a symptom tracking app called Arthritis Power. It can help me and the doc manage my arthritis better.
Well, great. Let's download it from the App Store. Arthritis Power?
Yep, it sounds easy. I just have to answer questions about my pain and other symptoms once a week. It only takes a few minutes. The doctor says that seeing my symptoms over time in this app can help us understand how my arthritis is responding to treatment.
That's cool. Now don't forget to use it, old man. You'll be helping yourself and your doctor.
Old man, what does that make you then?
If you have arthritis, download Arthritis Power. Arthritis Power is from the nonprofit Global Healthy Living Foundation and its patient community, Creaky Joints. Your information is protected and there's never a cost. In fact, you could even be paid for participating in research surveys about arthritis. For more information, go to arthritispower.org or search for Arthritis Power in your app store.
Trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors. Past results do not guarantee future performance.
Most people in today's economy are taking a roller coaster ride with their investments.
With Vantage Point Software, you can remove that dynamic from your investment strategy once and for all. Vantage Point has spent the last 3 decades perfecting an artificial intelligence process that you can put to use today to take advantage of market fluctuations and make money no matter which way the market moves. Vantage Point Software analyzes massive quantities of data all around the world in seconds, so you get the information you need to make the right decisions to optimize your profits. Vantage Point is making its exclusive market forecast process available to you for free when you text MONEY to 411-411. That's MONEY to 411-411. We'll send you a link to your free market forecast so you take back control of your financial future. Text MONEY to 411-411.
Go to VantagePointSoftware.com for terms, conditions, and privacy policy.
Folks, is here from Texas Show talking to Sonia Purnell about her biography of Clementine Churchill, wife of Winston. So you were just about to tell us the third person who testified to the importance of Clemmy in the life of Winston.
Well, I think we should ask Winston himself. And on the 40th wedding anniversary, they were in the south of France. It's 1948, so 3 years after the end of the war. They always slept in separate bedrooms. By the way, she wanted him to observe the protocol of the bedchamber. He always had to ask to come to her bedroom. Anyway, that morning, he...
This is an old-fashioned
thing.
But very elegant thing. I mean, obviously, if you could afford to have two bedrooms, it's just interesting.
Well, she... people describe being married to him as being like being hitched to a hurricane. So she needed somewhere... Well, she got a little bit of peace. Anyway, right. So that morning they were on vacation in the south of France. He pops a little piece of paper, a little note under her door, and it thanks her for all the happiness and things that she has given him. But it also says in that note that his life's work would not have been possible without her. I mean, she edited those speeches. She rehearsed them with him. She helped him with them. She helped him run the war in so many different ways domestically. She also advised them on how to deal with Roosevelt during their great summits, their conferences. Also de Gaulle, the leader of France, and even Stalin, who she went to see on her own in the Kremlin in Moscow in 1945. She was a real power player. Mm. And one more person we should ask, actually, is Gil Winant, who was the American ambassador to Britain during the war. A very great man, very little known now, but he too spent a great deal of time with the Churchills. And it's when I read his book when he said that he hoped that the future would breed historians of understanding, because if they did, they would give Clementine Churchill her due. And I hope I've done that in this book, because she does deserve it.
During the break, you said you had to correct the date of her death. It was not 1980.
No, that's right. I'm sorry, I got it wrong. It's January 1977. So she was
December.
Sorry, December 1977. She survived Churchill for nearly 12 years.
And she was, of course, about that much younger than he.
She was about a decade younger than he was.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Wow. Okay, so obviously when we think of Churchill, we think of his role in the Second War after Chamberlain. So he had been on the outs, so to speak, up to that point. But hadn't he been the one essentially predicting Hitler and what they needed to face up to sooner rather than later?
That's right. I mean, really from the early 30s, he observed what was happening in Germany and worried about it greatly, the sort of the rising nationalism there. He realized that this was trouble, and it wasn't just happening in Germany. Obviously, it was also in Italy and Spain and elsewhere. He was one of the first to observe that this was trouble being stored up for the future. And he and she continually urged Britain to prepare, to realize that the threat was growing. Now, for a long time, both of them, again, a bit like after Gallipoli, were socially ostracized by the appeasers. Most people in their class, in their social circle, didn't agree with them, thought actually that Hitler was a kind of barrier against Bolshevism in Soviet Russia. And so, again, that they were, you know, people would cross the road to avoid greeting them when they were sort of walking down the sidewalk. This was tough, you know, it was tough. And people said that his career was over, that he was making a fool of himself. He also much against her advice on this occasion, backed the wrong side of history in the whole abdication crisis. So he was a man out of favour and out of power.
He
thought the king should stay on, should be allowed to marry Wallis Simpson and stay on as king. But that was clearly, you know, he was on the wrong side of history, as they say. But that was against her advice. She
Why do you say that? In other words, to me, the king who abdicated, I'm glad he abdicated because he seemed quite unfit for that kind of leadership, apart from his relationship with a divorced American.
It's interesting. I mean, Churchill, a lot of people don't understand that Churchill was a great romantic. He rather bought into the idea that this was true love,
yeah.
that a man was acting out of love,
yeah.
and that he had the divine right of kings almost to act in that way. Clementine came to it from a different direction. She saw that the popular opinion was against Wallis. She was very, very not, you know, popular with people, that this king would therefore struggle in his role as king, and that also it was against what the throne was about. So they had epic rows about this. She lost on this occasion, but after the new king was crowned, Churchill turned to her, as he did on many occasions, and said, "I see that you were right."
Well. Okay, so the war, we've got to leap ahead. Where was Churchill when Neville Chamberlain waves the piece of paper in Munich? Where was Churchill at that point?
Well, Churchill was still out of power, still arguing that this was a terrible, terrible historic mistake. They were both Churchills were now making speeches to that effect. And
both Churchills?
Both Churchills, absolutely.
And Clementine was making
absolutely
speeches?
Absolutely, she was, yes.
Wow.
So they had this country house called Chartwell, which was where they were organising, both of them again, basically organising almost like an alternative intelligence network, an alternative government. People were coming to them from all over Europe with information as to what was happening, all the military preparations that were happening on mainland Europe.
Yeah.
And they were collecting that information. So Chartwell became almost like a sort of hub of activity, and people arriving all times of day and night. Clementine very much helping to organize
that. So like
that.
A shadow government.
Very much like a shadow government.
I think that's happening in Obama's townhouse as we speak. Okay, we can't talk about that. So how does he come to power suddenly?
Well, war breaks out in 1939. Chamberlain is still prime minister. He realizes that he needs Winston Churchill. After all, he's fought in a war before. He's conducted a war before. So he becomes First Lord of the Admiralty again, the guy in charge of the Navy in 1939. But then Chamberlain is clearly not up to the job of a wartime prime minister. There becomes a crisis in 1940. Churchill finally enters 10 Downing Street at the age of 65. But he becomes leader of a country with its back up against the wall. It expects to be invaded any day.
Yeah.
Belgium, Holland are falling. France is about to fall. You couldn't take over a country in a worse crisis.
I have to say that when I saw the film Dunkirk some months ago, I was astounded at how little I understood the drama and the import of those decisions in that moment. We're going to go to a final break. We'll be back with Sonia Purnell. The book is Clementine, The Life of Mrs. Winston Churchill.
How was the doctor?
Not what I expected. I have arthritis.
What? How can I help?
Well, the doctor gave me a rundown on what to know and what to do, and also mentioned a symptom tracking app called Arthritis Power. It can help me and the doc manage my arthritis better.
Well, great. Let's download it from the App Store. Arthritis Power?
Yep, it sounds easy. I just have to answer questions about my pain and other symptoms once a week. It only takes a few minutes. The doctor says that seeing my symptoms over time in this app can help us understand how my arthritis is responding to treatment.
That's cool. Now don't forget to use it, old man. You'll be helping yourself and your doctor.
Old man? And what does that make you then?
If you have arthritis, download Arthritis Power. Arthritis Power is from the nonprofit Global Healthy Living Foundation and its patient community, Creaky Joints. Your information is protected, and there's never a cost. In fact, you could even be paid for participating in research surveys about arthritis. For more information, go to arthritispower.org or search for Arthritis Power in your app store.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott.
House Democrats have announced they'll hold the first public hearings next week in their impeachment inquiry of President Trump. Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan says Ambassador Kurt Volker has testified that there was no quid pro quo.
As the special envoy, as the guy who is the professional here, the guy who has been focused on this, who's the special envoy to Ukraine, backed all that up in his testimony. But, no one wants to talk about that. The Democrats don't want to call him as the first witness, even though he was the first witness to be deposed.
The three scheduled to testify, Ukraine diplomat William Taylor, career Department official George Kent, and former U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine Marie Yovanovitch. Controversy remaining in the Kentucky governor election, Democrat Andy Beshear declaring victory, but Republican Governor Matt Bevin campaign now asking for a re-canvass of vote totals. This is SRN News.
If your family depends on your income and something happened to you, what would happen to them? You need life insurance, and SelectQuote can help you get it at a price you can afford.
SelectQuote found Jacob, 40, who's in excellent health, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for only $19 a month.
Not in perfect health? Don't worry.
SelectQuote found Tanya, 40, who has type 2 diabetes, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for only $32 a month.
We shop companies like Protective, Prudential, American General, and others to find you the company with the best rates. Give your family the security they need at a price you can afford.
For your free quote, call 1-800-880-7474. That's 1-800-880-7474. Or go to selectquote.com. That's 1-800-880-7474.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save.
Get full details on the example policies at selectquote.com/commercials. Your premium could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
From Barry Manilow to the Churchills, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show, talking to Sonia Pernell. Sonia, you said just now that Clementine wrote a letter when Churchill becomes prime minister, wrote a letter to him saying what?
Well, I was just saying just now, too, that how Britain had its back up against the wall, and Churchill had acquired numerous powers because he was prime minister in an emergency. But she noticed that he was being rather rude and overbearing with his staff. One of them, we don't know who, I have my suspicions, went to see her on her own, already realizing that she was this kind of alternative power. As a result, she wrote him a letter saying, "You must be kinder to your staff. You must be the lovable person that I know you are. You don't want to create an atmosphere of hostility. You want people to come to you with ideas and not be frightened of you." It's the most extraordinary, forthright, if loving letter. Now, there is no reply that we know of, but if you look at the diaries and memoirs of the entourage, the people who were working closely with him, they say about how he suddenly changes, and that he still barks at them sometimes, but then he puts his arm around them and says something like, "I didn't mean to be fierce. I only want to be fierce with that gangster in Berlin." And then they start saying that the Prime Minister's bad temper phase was a passing one, or "He really is lovable. I was wrong." And so you see her influence. You see how he realizes that he needs people to want to work with him rather than do so because they're scared not to.
Now, we know that he struggled with serious depression. He called it the black dog. I imagine that she must have been a great comfort to him, although it's difficult to know what to do with that kind of depression. Did she just go away, or did she was she able to deal with him when he was deeply depressed?
Well, I think we really see Black Dog for the first time after Gallipoli during the First World War. And then she and Goonie, who was his sister-in-law, encourage him to paint. So they buy him an easel and some paints and a few canvases. And from that day onwards, painting is his comfort. Even in the Second World War, occasionally he found a chance to paint, such as when he was in Morocco with FDR. Roosevelt was there too. So it's interesting that she understood that black dog and how to cope with
it. It's amazing how different leaders cope with different things. I know that Stalin would just shoot kulaks when he was feeling down. It's amazing to me that he also drank so much champagne. He would wake up in the morning and drink. Can you say something about that? Because I'm amazed that she would let him do that.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. There is the myth, and then there's the man. The myth is that he drank a lot more than he actually did.
Uh-huh.
Like
Dean Martin.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, he was part of, because he was very prone to crying. Winston Churchill, he would shed tears at the sort of slightest drop of a hat. So he had to come up with a way of making himself sound more macho. Now, being a hard drinker was one of them. Sure, he did drink a bit. For instance, he had a whiskey straight after breakfast. Yeah, really quite shocking.
Who doesn't? Am I right?
Heavily diluted, and it would last him until lunch, where he would have one glass of champagne.
Okay.
And then one more whiskey during the whole of the afternoon. Now, this is hard drinking by our standards.
In those days, it was like drinking Snapple, peach Snapple, diet peach Snapple. We're out of time, Sonia Purnell. I had hoped not to end on a Snapple reference. I apologize. It's such a delight having you here. I'd like you to come back as soon as possible and continue to talk about these and other books you've written. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me.